Hey, Anita.
Hi, can you hear me?
I can. Do you have a webcam to be able to do this with a video?
Yes, let me see.
I can do it, I think.
Okay.
There we go.
That's
That's not Anita. Okay.
I hear early. I wasn't sure how difficult it was going to be to get on.
That's all good. That's all good. You're allowed to be here early. You're going to hear our internal getting our house ready.
Okay.
Carolyn, where are you from?
Birmingham,
Okay,
Alabama.
wonderful. Thank you for joining.
Okay, there I
There's Anita. Anita,
Hello.
you also are going to have some slides to share.
Yes. Do I
Okay.
send
So you
them
can
to
put them
you?
up now if you want, or you can wait,
Okay.
whatever you want to do.
Well, let's just at least test it to make sure that it works. So, can you see that?
Not yet.
Okay.
You could go and share screen.
Okay. Okay, give me 1 second. Okay.
There we go.
Hey, you can see that?
Yep.
All right.
We're good. We are good. We are going to wait, though,
Oh,
until
yes, there was a long list of participants.
we're going to wait till the moment because we don't want to get all, you know.
It's nice to see everybody.
Okay, everybody, I have 4 p.m. on the East Coast, so we are going to begin. We are recording today's session, and so if you join a little bit late, no worries, it will be recorded and will be on our website. More and more are joining. I want to let everybody know as you join that we are hoping that you're all going to be mute for the beginning of our session. And that you, if I have difficulty, I will be muting you. So you should all be muted, only to avoid background noises and whatnot. And we will invite you to use the chat feature in Zoom if you have specific questions as we move along. And Anita, our presenter, is going to allow time toward the end for questions and discussion. And we may, given how many are there, we may unmute everybody. We'll see how that all goes. But I want to begin first by welcoming everybody and thanking you for joining us. This conversation is focused on the HR implications of the coronavirus. I am going to go ahead and mute all. And I will unmute Anita in a moment. So we are fortunate today to have a presentation from Anita Patton, who's the Director of Human Resources with CNA Benefits Group. CNA Benefits Group is an insurance brokerage firm that works with the Network of Jewish Human Service Agencies and administers our association health plan, which many agencies are involved with. Anita herself has an extensive background in the human resource field and has worked her career in a consulting role. She's partnered with a variety of business leaders, corporate executives, middle managers, and small business owners as their HR advisor. She understands the complexity of balancing operations and people management and can help us to facilitate some very complex dynamics that the coronavirus brings about when you think about HR. So she's going to walk us through her presentation. And as I said, you are certain will have questions. Some of your questions will be very state specific or province specific, those of you coming in from Canada. Anita does not know the laws of every specific state, but can give you guidance as to how to manage that and how to move forward. So with that, I am going to unmute Anita. and invite her to begin the conversation with us.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and thank you for joining me. As Ruben said, I'm going to kind of take you through some of the key HR elements that you may have questions about as we go through this coronavirus issue. And then, of course, at the end of the presentation, we will open it up for questions, because I know that there's a lot going on out there. And once again, just be understandable that these are very fluid situations going on right now. So some information I have will be pretty rock solid. And of course, some will be pending some new changes and new legislation that may be coming down the pike. So let's start with unemployment claims. I mean, one of the biggest questions that I've received over the past few days is, will our employees be able to at least be able to claim unemployment with these changes going on with either their employment ending or their work hours being reduced? So the U.S. Department of Labor have given states pretty broad latitude and making changes to their unemployment laws to make it possible for individuals who are being impacted by this virus to be able to apply for and to receive benefits. So some of the situations that the government says should qualify for benefits would be if an employer had to temporarily close operations and the employee no longer had access to get to work, they would be eligible for benefits. If an individual needs to be quarantined, because once again, they are self-quarantining because of either exposure to or concern of displaying the symptoms of the virus, but they anticipate returning to their job after the two-week quarantine, they should qualify for benefits during that quarantine timeframe. If an individual leaves employment because they feel that there is a high risk of exposure or infection, or if they leave employment because they have to take care of a family member who is going through a quarantine or diagnosis of the virus, then once again, the states should allow them to apply for and to receive benefits. Now, some other things to keep in mind about how unemployment claims work. Each state still has some basic eligibility requirements that employees must meet in addition to the COVID-19 exceptions in order for them to qualify for benefits. So first, the employee has to at least have worked a minimum number of weeks in the preceding 12 months. And the minimum number of weeks will vary by state. Usually it's somewhere between 16 to 20 weeks within the past year. And they have to have earned a minimum weekly gross dollar amount during that 20-week period. Once again, that dollar amount will vary with each state. So looking at your state's unemployment claim site will give you a little bit more details about your specific state. Now, many states have decided to waive any waiting periods associated with being eligible to submit a claim. And they're also waiving any requirements that they normally have that employees must seek employment in order to be eligible for these benefits. Now, some states have waived these requirements, some states have not. So once again, it really is going to require you to look specifically at your state website in order to determine if that condition applies. But on average, any individual who is applying for benefits under the COVID-19 incident is going to be eligible for up to about 26 weeks of unemployment benefit payments. Once again, based on having met the first two requirements. So the next area usually comes into managing an extended kind of sick leave situation with an employee. So first I want to talk about the laws and the processes that are currently in place that if you have an employee that is diagnosed with the virus or has to take extended sick leave because of one of the either the quarantine situation or some other COVID-19 related incident, what could you do to make sure that you are doing the right thing to give them the time off that they need from the job? Right now, if your organization is required to abide by the Family Medical Leave Act, and that particular act provides job security, but does not require the leave time to be paid, that is one option that you will then be able to use to give them the time off that they need and allow them to return to work if work is going to be available. If your organization is too small, if it's less than 50 employees, it will not be required to follow the FMA guidelines, then any request for leave of absence is going to have to fall under your organization's medical leave policy. So whatever policy your organization currently has in place, whether that's paid time or unpaid time, that would then be the option that you'd want to put into place for individuals requesting leave under a COVID-19 incident. Also, if your organization offers short-term disability, a COVID-19 incident will qualify for short-term disability coverage. Now, most STD programs have a 7 to 8 day waiting period before the employee can be eligible for the benefit. And most employees would like to use either their paid time off or any sick time they may have accrued to cover that eligibility period. So if they're going to be off for a week or less, they will not qualify for most short-term disability programs. If they're going to be off for 8 days or more, then they will be able to apply for the benefit after the waiting period is over, and they could receive up to 12 to 13 weeks of benefits under this particular program. And short-term disability benefits is going to pay them 60% of what their normal wage was at the time they took the leave. Now, let's say that their illness extends past that 12 to 13 week timeframe when they were eligible for STD. The next phase, should that illness need additional time to recover, that's going to transition to what we call long-term disability. If your organization has a long-term disability benefit, it will then take over from STD into long-term disability. They will then continue to get 60% of their wages, and most long-term disability programs either have a maximum time frame or will carry them through until they return to retirement age. So you would have to read the policy for your long-term disability program if you have one, because that would be the next phase that the individual will transition to. If your organization does not have a long-term disability program, then they will have to apply for disability coverage through the Social Security Administration after their short-term disability benefits have ended. Now, one benefit that would not apply for most of your employees for any extended sick leave is workers' compensation. So for the most part, 90% of employees who come down with this virus or in any way is affected by this virus will not have their claims covered under workers' compensation. Most of those illnesses are going to fall under what the government kind of titles as ordinary risk to life, because it's just an ordinary disease that's part of being out in the public. Usually the only groups that might have a chance of having workers' compensation cover any incidents around COVID-19 are going to be those in the medical field or those kind of in that first responder role. Outside of that, it's going to be very, very difficult for the average employee to connect any diagnosis of COVID-19 directly to the workplace. Now, we've talked about some things that are definitely in place, policies and laws that are already on the books that are available in case you have a leave of absence situation. Now I want to talk about kind of what's in the works, what could be coming down the pike in terms of new legislation that could impact your organization. I know that you've heard about the Emergency Family First Coronavirus Act, and this is going to require organizations and small businesses to actually pay employees to take time off the job for a COVID-19 incident. Now, I have to let you know, this has not passed. This law is still fluid. One of the big obstacles to it being passed right now is that the Senate is very concerned about the financial implications that this law will have on organizations and small businesses. So what I'm walking you through is currently how the bill is set up. But once again, there could be changes coming if and when this bill finally passes. So this bill was meant to apply to employers with 500 or less employees. If you have 50 or less employees, you could apply for an exemption to comply with this if you state that complying with this new law is going to financially cripple your organization or your business to the point that your organization or your business will not survive. So there is kind of a small out for some of the really smaller organizations and groups. And once again, if this bill passes, there will be very clear information on how to apply for that exemption. This bill is going to allow employees to have up to 12 weeks of job protected and paid medical leave for a COVID-19 incident. Now, there are two components to this proposal that kind of work in tandem. One is the emergency paid sick leave part, and then we have the emergency paid family medical leave part. And I'm going to walk you through the components of each of those and hopefully try to connect the dots of how they work together. But once again, very fluid. There are some disconnects right now in how this policy is laid out. And so once again, that's another kind of barrier to it being passed, is that some of the language still needs to be clarified. But once again, this is what is currently on the books. So if we look at the emergency paid leave section first, this is going to entitle full-time employees to receive 2 weeks of paid time off for a COVID-19 incident. Part-time employees will also be entitled to receive 2 weeks of paid time off, but it's going to be based on what their average hours are for a typical two-week period. If an employee wants to request time off because they are going into quarantine based on being diagnosed with the virus, if they are seeking medical treatment because they are coming down with the symptoms and they are displaying the key symptoms of the virus, or if they go into quarantine because they have a reasonable belief that they have been exposed to the virus, then they will be able to take those 2 weeks of paid time off. And as an employer, you would be required to pay for that. If they're going to request time off for a family member, then the pay scale changes. The employee is going to be entitled to receive 2/3 of what their regular pay rate was. If they're going to request time off for a family member who is going through any one of the three items I just talked about, or if they're going to be looking to care for a child whose school is closed, or a child whose child care provider is now unavailable due to an issue with the coronavirus. And that could be that the facility closed, or that could be that they simply cannot take them to their normal child care because of the social distancing policy that's currently in place. So once again, not a lot of detail as to how all of this is going to work out financially for organizations. But once again, this is one of the proposals, is to have emergency paid sick time for these incidents as they occur. So now let's look at part two of this new bill. The emergency paid family medical leave, which is going to be similar to FMLA. So this leave is going to allow employees who have worked at least 30 days with an employer to be able to take this leave. Now, normally, under FMLA, an employee would have to work for you for at least 12 months before they become eligible for any type of leave under this particular law. In this case, they're suspending that, and 30 days is long enough for them to qualify. The first 14 days of this leave can go unpaid. The employee can choose to use any PTO time if they have that available, but you cannot force them to use their PTO time for those first 2 weeks. And I need to let you know that any paid time that would fall under this new law is going to be in addition to any PTO that the employee may be currently eligible for under your current policy. And the law also says that the employer cannot rewrite their leave of absence policies to somehow make all of this work in tandem for them. So if you're trying to connect your current PTO or a paid leave policy and have it kind of sync with this to where maybe you're adding that time in versus, you know, having it come off as additional time, the law is not going to permit you to do that. So whatever policies you currently have in place, This law is going to be on top of that. Now, how can an employee use this time? They can use it to adhere to a requirement or a recommendation to go into quarantine due to the exposure to the virus, or if they're displaying key symptoms of the virus. And then once again, they can use it to care for a family member who once again needs to go into quarantine, has been diagnosed, or is displaying the symptoms of the virus. And then once again, to care for a child whose school is closed or whose daycare provider is no longer available due to the COVID-19 restrictions. So once again, this particular law is very fluid. This particular law raises a lot of concern. This has really caused a lot of panic among a lot of small businesses and smaller organizations. But right now, the Senate is just as concerned as you are. And right now they're looking to have a better solution that they feel won't burden our businesses. But right now we don't know if this is gonna pass or not, but if it does, just want you to be able to look at all of the financial implications and be able to put a plan in place to deal with that. So one of the other key questions was, when do we tell our employees to self-quarantine? And you know, the answer is very simple. If they are displaying any of the key symptoms, if they are talking about having a fever, and right now it could be a very low grade fever. It used to be a fever of 100.6, and they've lowered that to 99.6 because for adults will usually display lower fever and still have a much higher level of being infected. If they are experiencing a cough, and this is going to be more of a dry, hacky cough, more so than kind of a wet kind of mucusy cough. And more importantly, if they're saying that they're having difficulty breathing, because this is a virus that affects the respiratory system. If they truly have a reasonable belief that they have been exposed to the virus, and for example, if they've been in touch with someone who's been in a different part of the country where the virus is a little bit more active, if they have recently returned from a trip from a location where the virus was a little bit more active, if they truly have a belief that they may have been exposed to the virus, it's better to have them self-quarantine than for them to have any connection to your workplace. And then, of course, if they've actually been diagnosed with the virus, of course, they're going to go into quarantine on that basis. Now, part of this is really about how do we keep our employees' information confidential. It's critically important that you understand that the law prohibits any organization from revealing the name of an employee who has been diagnosed or who is suspected of having the virus. And we do that because we do not want to put any stigmas on an employee to make the recovery any more difficult. Sharing medical information has always been against the law, but it is even more so with regards to this particular pandemic. Employees can be told that a worker has been diagnosed in your workplace if that is the case, but you must withhold the name. So you can sit down, you can have that conversation, you can let them know, give them that update so that they can put a plan in place to safeguard their own health. But you by no means can reveal the name of the employee that is involved. If an employee is diagnosed with the virus, please know that the health care provider will take care of reporting the diagnosis to the CDC and your local health department, and then more than likely they will be connecting with you as your employer to let you know about the diagnosis. But as the employer, you will not be obligated to contact those government agencies. Now, this is something that's probably near and dear to my heart as well as Ruben's right now. It's the anxiety level that's being created by all of the restrictions and the regulations, and in some cases, looking at all of the limits of what our individuals are able to do on a day-to-day basis. I know that as bosses, as individuals in the workplace, it's really hard to remain calm when you really understand the implications of what some of this can do with your employees. But you do need to try to be that voice of common reason as you share information and as your employees come with you with information or concerns about this particular situation. One of the things I highly recommend is that you limit the level of times you look for updates on this virus. I have seen people actually put little COVID-19 notifications that pop up on their phone every time any type of blog or any type of news broadcast happens with COVID-19. You really need to look at limiting the exposure to the news. I recommend you pick like one time a day and one source that you'd like to look at. So if it's normally the evening news, okay, we'll get our update from the evening news. But to have constant updates throughout the day, to constantly be scanning the internet, that is really a source of stress, because you're going to be hearing information from so many different sources that it can feel overwhelming. So really think about not looking at updates so frequently and trying to shield yourself from updates until you're ready to actually pick that one time of day when you're going to go and get your updates, because you do need to stay aware, but you don't need to stay aware every 15 minutes. Continue to do those things that help relieve stress for you. If it's a hobby, if it's exercise, if it's playing games, continue to really encourage your employees to do the things that they really enjoy doing. If they don't have a hobby, get a hobby. This is a great time to get a hobby. And there's just a lot of easy things. I have little games on my phone that I play, little word games. I mean, anything that kind of relaxes your mind and just gives you an opportunity to just kind of step outside of the situation. But it's just really important that you do something at the end of the day to just relax. And watching a COVID-19 update is not it. They need to have some way of talking with someone that they trust, whether that's a friend, a family member, a personal counselor, whether that's a minister. Talking through your fears sometimes and just getting it out really helps to kind of, helps it to dissipate a little bit. So really making sure that there's at least one person that you can connect with in order to share your concerns. But once again, we're all responsible for the level of information that we choose to take in. So, choose that counsel wisely. But really and truly, it really is about taking control of your life and living your life. Your life is still yours to live. Even though we know we have, restrictions going on, we have, different things that limit where we can go, how often we can go, how late we can stay out. Still look for ways to spend quality time with your family. And, right now, a lot of us could have kids at home. Hug the little ones. We know that we normally don't have this level of day-to-day time, with them. So find a way to enjoy it. Find a way to have some time at the end of the day where you do something with your family, where you take your mind off of this situation, whether it's family game night or something that really allows you to enjoy this time. If you're stuck in the house with your children, you might as well love it, okay? Some other things to think about. If your organization offers an employee assistance program, and I think Ruben had talked about potentially that there are some options for telephonic counseling. A lot of EAP programs do have kind of a free element where you have a certain number of free telephonic counseling sessions. But if you have something similar to that, you might want to open that up and give your employees access to that if they normally have not had access before. Once again, giving them that additional outlet to get, some counseling and some assistance. Most large cities do have COVID-19 hotlines. Sometimes people feel comfortable if they can talk to what they feel are experts and get some facts for themselves. So sharing that hotline and giving them the ability to, get quality detailed information from themselves sometimes can help to kind of dissipate some of the stress and anxiety. And of course, just maintaining an open door policy, even if it has to be, through technology, just being able to be accessible to talk through any concerns and to answer any questions. Some things that help is letting your employees know if you still have employees who are actively working, specific time frames or days of the week when updates will be coming to them about what's going on in the workplace, what's happening with the organization, what's happening with the business. A lot of times stress can be alleviated when I know when I'm going to be getting new information so that I don't have to wonder when that information is going to be coming. But basically, you just want to continue to share the fact that adhering to the safety precautions, adhering to the recommendations of social distancing, is going to be the best way to safeguard our health, and that this crisis will pass. We will ride it out. You know, there's enough food for everyone. There's enough supplies for the basic needs of most of our individuals. We're just going to truly have to look more on the positive side, do a little bit more thinking about getting through this, but this will pass. And while it doesn't feel good now, there will be an end, and an end coming in sight. So we just need to keep everyone focused on the fact that it's a temporary situation and it will get better. Now I am open for
questions. All right. Thank you. Thank you, Anita. And thank you for ending on such a positive note that this is temporary and will pass. I do think one of the dynamics that has been most challenging for our network is that the core service that our agencies provide is really connecting face-to-face with people. And with this virus, you need to engage in social distancing. And many, many agencies in our network have now actually closed their physical offices.
Okay.
And have staff working remotely. And so the challenge of maintaining connections with employees, you know, when they don't see each other every day, and feeling that connection is new and different. And so I will share, just to start the questions, increasingly our agencies are sharing with us that they're having daily, what they call daily huddles.
Yes.
Where just for 15 minutes at the beginning of each day or the middle of each day or at the end of each day, doesn't really matter when it is, everybody knows to either dial in to a central line on a conference call service or connect by Zoom, however they can do it, just to be connected and just to hear from their colleagues. It's very isolating to be doing this work alone.
Yes.
And it's very isolating to feel like you're so disconnected from your colleagues. So,
excellent.
So I just wanted to share that.
That's an excellent process.
Yeah, a lot of what Anita shared at the beginning was very technical, and it you know, dealt with laws and regulations and oversight and whatnot. Are there questions? I'm afraid to unmute everybody at the same time because we've got 30 people on this call, but I'm going to put the floor out. If there are questions specifically, you can type them into your chat or you could raise your hand. So what I'm going to try to do, because I believe that there was one question that came through, from somebody who may or may not still be here. Oh, doesn't seem to, oh, no, is here. So I'm gonna unmute Jeff from Detroit.
Okay.
Jeff, did I just unmute you?
I think so. Can you hear me?
Yep.
Yes.
Great, you unmuted me. Do you have a
question that you wanted to raise?
Yeah, Anita, I had a question about the funding of that, the emergency paid leave bill. So the Senate just passed it like moments ago. So we'll have to comb through it and see if it changes before the president signs it. But I understood at one point that all of that relief was going to be reimbursed by the government through either payroll tax reimbursement or a rebate of previous payroll tax that was already paid. I guess part of what you said about relief for employers under 50 employees implies that potentially that's not in there anymore.
Well, yeah, that was in there. Initially, it was looked at as having a payroll tax credit, and basically it was going to be about not having to pay the Social Security tax associated with the payroll. And so once again, I'm trying to keep ahead of, so you said it just passed through the Senate?
We were on this
90 seconds ago.
Yeah, because I've been drinking all day. So I will have to read through now what officially has passed to be able to, you know, send out a summary to kind of give you an idea of what all of this now means. But originally,
sure, no problem. I don't want to put you on the spot. I'm just surprised because if the government is simply requiring employers to pay their employees, mm-hmm. that's not aid. Or I guess it's not aid in the way I would conceive of aid. I understood that the government would be facilitating that by paying the employers in some way.
Oh, yeah. And so, yeah, the previous information that I read, it wasn't going to be a dollar for dollar reimbursement as I was interpreting. It was going to be more along some type of, you know, payroll tax credit. No time to determine exactly what level of tax credit that they were going to be issuing. And initially it was going to be really and truly based more on that Social Security tax not being required to be paid. But there may have been changes just based on what they've currently passed. So
I got it. So it's a moving target. I get it. I was just surprised.
Yeah, I was surprised too. Trust me, I've read this thing six ways from Sunday and I really could
all 200 pages of it. I'm impressed.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to share a couple more questions that have come through the chat.
Thank you. So
our agency, Don in Madison, is asking if we are too small to be covered by FMLA, are we still covered under this new emergency leave bill?
No, if your organization has less than 50 employees, then, and once again, I'll have to make sure that that element has remained in the final bill. Once again, you would be able to apply for an exemption not to comply with this new law.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
But once again, that's going to be an actual application process that you would submit to the government to say we need to be exempt from complying.
Okay. All right, another question. I just want to remind everybody, the slide deck is going to be sent to everybody after the meeting, and we have a recording of this that will be up on our website, so you'll be able to get that. We have a question that's come through. What if you have potential exposure that is far removed? For example, my daughter has a friend at school who has a mother who is sick and may be getting tested. Maybe I should, as an employee working here, maybe I should self-quarantine. You know, what's your guidance in terms of these types of situations that may be raised to HR? Anita? Oh, Anita may have frozen. No, can't hear you, Anita.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Yeah, now we can.
Okay, I'm sorry, you went to a freeze mode. So this is what I would recommend. I think I would have to say, what was the frequency of contact that that child had with the other child that had contact with the mother? I was asked, you know, are you seeing any symptoms either in the child, of the other parent, in your child, or are you feeling any symptoms within yourself? So if you feel there is a reasonable belief that your child has been in either extremely close contact with the other child or the mother,
right,
that contact has been fairly recent, then you might want to self-quarantine just from a safety perspective. But if you're not exhibiting any symptoms right now, and your child is not exhibiting any symptoms, then that's really and truly just going to be a judgment call that you're going to have to make. And I would talk that over, you know, with your supervisor to see what they would recommend. But that would be an example of, yes, maybe, just depending on the frequency of contact you feel this child has had with the other household.
Okay, thank you. Another question came through. Is there something coming that is also for larger employers if they have over 500 staff?
And that was the big issue, is that this particular law had been written for small businesses, but there was no such restrictions or new laws written for larger organizations. It was kind of believed that the larger organizations kind of had policies in place that would provide more long-term payment options for leave. But no, right now, there as of yesterday, until this bill passed, there was no addendum that applied to larger corporations.
Okay. All right. Thank you. Here's an interesting question. What can an agency do to protect itself when you have an employee who's had attendance issues in the past and seems to be taking advantage of COVID-19 to miss days from work?
Okay. I've asked what explanations they give to feel like they should be self-quarantined. I need to know if this is an hourly individual or a salary paid individual, because the response could be slightly different for the pay group.
Uh-huh. All right. So maybe what I'll do is something very risky. But maybe I will, if Laraz is still with us, I will try to unmute so we could have a little dialogue there. Laraz, can you hear me?
Yes, Ruben, I can hear you.
Fab. Want to share your little dynamic there?
Well, as you'd stated, in the past, this person has been a frequent habitual calling out individual, an hourly employee. Mm-hmm. And this is interesting. This started to happen prior to COVID outbreak. And as they were out, then it happened. And then they took advantage of the symptoms. Mm-hmm. And stated, oh, well, I've gone to the doctor. We would get strange doctor notes. Mm-hmm. Come from people that they spoke to online. This was within the first 4 days. Okay. After, on the fifth day, they stated that they were going to actually go to the doctor. And at the time, that was... Our FMLA policy ticked at that time, because it was 5 days out of the office. So I was able to at least initiate that process with this individual.
Okay. And
they were coming back with information stating, oh, the doctor doesn't know what it is. They gave me a flu test. I was negative for it. So now I'm just going to self-quarantine myself. And that was their words versus what was stated on the letter from the doctor. Nothing about self-quarantining, just a date to return. And she still hasn't returned, and she still hasn't provided FMLA paperwork. And it hasn't been 15 days since when we issued the document to her.
Okay, so how long has it been since you issued the FMLA document?
Issued the document on the 12th of March.
Okay, what is the day, the 19th?
Today is the 18th.
Okay, so, you know, we are going to have to at least allow her the required time frame for the doctor to return the information. Mm-hmm. I'm assuming this is kind of on an unpaid basis.
Well, so this is what's even more interesting. Because this happened just as the mandations of what we need to do in regards to stopping exposure and containment. Mm-hmm. So our agency took that as a requirement to close our buildings down, our offices down, and the hourly employees, believe it or not, and I'm so grateful to be working for this agency, that they're able to do something like this. They are going to continue to keep the employees whole until whenever that opportunity, or, you know, those funds run out. But so now she's kind of still getting paid because she qualifies for that now. So it's kind of sticky. Mm-hmm. In that regard.
All right. So mm-hmm.
What I like to do is probably take this time, because I think you probably need a little bit more of my time.
Exactly. I was just about mm-hmm. to say that. So I do want to let you all know. Anita graciously has offered to be a consultant for our network and answer some individual questions that are unique, because in HR, you always have these things that come up that are unique. And so there are a couple more that have come through that you may end up, Anita, getting some emails from some individuals.
Okay.
So I'm just going to share with you a couple of other examples.
Okay.
An agency is saying that one of their employees is saying they are immunocompromised, but when I look up their diagnosis, and medical sites explicitly says that the diagnosis is not an issue. So there's a question. Another one, if an employee has underlying health issues and maybe over 60, but with no symptoms or exposure and requests to be off work in accordance with their doctor, should we automatically grant the time off? And if so, should it be FMLA?
I'm going to probably say yes, because COVID-19 is very specific about the groups who are more at risk. And once again, if this is coming with a doctor's recommendation, that kind of ties your hands in terms of not, you know, being able to approve the time off.
Okay. We have another question, which is narrow in focus, but does apply to some of our agencies. Okay. This agency operates a residential facility. Clients live there 24/7.
Okay.
If a client has COVID-19 who lives in the facility and a majority of employees are unable to come to work, where she just wants to confirm that the recommendation would be for them to file for unemployment.
Yes.
Yes. Here you go. Stephanie, you got your answer. It's a yes. So I'm trying to keep up with the chat box here. I think we've got them all. There was one agent, Ron. I'm not sure where Ron is from, but I can figure that out later. But he posted for everybody his agency's temporary telework policy. So we will download that and we will post that on the website as well. Somebody asked if anybody has policies that they can share. Everybody should know we have a section in the members portal for coronavirus policies and procedures and guidance and links to resources and information that we've been collecting, both from our agencies and our network and beyond. A lot of CNA benefits group material is there as well. And so this will go there as well. We do have a few minutes remaining. If anybody has any additional questions that they want to pose, we still have most of the group on the call. So we're open for a question or two more, where if you think that I didn't capture something sufficiently, you know, I can do something really bold. We've only got a few minutes. So here we go. I'm going to unmute everybody. Let it rip. All right. You're all unmuted. It's a free for all now. Happy HR.
Hello.
All right. Does anybody have a question or a comment that they want to shout out? Unless you mute yourselves, I've unmuted you.
I have actually, Ruben, I have something. This is Roselle from New Orleans. So our office is officially closing our physical space on Friday. Mm-hmm. However, over 50% of our staff have already been working off-site. So talking about staff morale, beginning Monday, when I am also working off-site, when we have our 9 a.m. Zoom call like this, and I am really trying to get all of my staff to actually be on screen, because I think that's really helpful for us to see each other's faces. I have a cadre of, it's New Orleans, I have a cadre of costumes and goofy hats and crazy stuff, and I plan every day to be dressed up in something, I don't know what, but just to try to, and then try to encourage some other people if they're home and they want to participate. Just to do, you know, when we do that kind of virtual group hug, that we make it light as well, that it's not all intense. So I just wanted to share that with y'all. Don't tell my staff.
Hey, this is Jody in Des Moines. I had a similar idea. Next time we do our Zoom meeting, I'm going to come in with my hair in rollers and like cold cream all over my face. So it looks like I just got out of bed.
I love it.
I think that'll crack everybody up.
Yeah, I think that's great.
Yeah, one of the agencies shared with me this morning, people were embarrassed about their bedhead, you know, in the morning. And so they didn't want to turn the video on until the director of the agency said, look at me, what do you think?
Yeah.
I like great. That. Those are great morale builders. Well, I do want to make one comment before we close. I mean, a lot of you have shared some of the challenges that you have, you know, with a few employees who want to try to take advantage of the system, the program, you know, the current crisis. You will always have those individuals who are going to take advantage of a situation in order to try to work it to their best advantage. I just want us as leaders to make sure we're keeping our mindset on the other 99% of our employees who are very honest, who are very forthright, and who are truly trying to do the right thing in balancing all of you know, these conflicting priorities that are going on right now. So as I help you with your one-off situations, I just don't want you to allow them to suck out all of your positive energy. I want you to know that that is just part of doing business, whether this crisis was going on or not. And so my job will be to get you through that as quickly as possible. But I want you to keep your mind focused on the positive energy that the rest of your employees exhibit in supporting your agency and supporting your team groups, and just make sure that we're reserving enough energy to really create that positive, calm state of mind for the rest of our teams, okay?
Yeah, and you know, I just want to follow up with a comment that so much of our energy is focused on our clients and the communities that we serve, but we can only do that effectively with a very strong staff team. A team that feels like it's being supported and its needs are being addressed. And all too often in human services, the staff do tend to come last, and the emphasis and the priority is on the clients, which is appropriate, but you can't deliver the services to the clients without the staff. So it's really a balance. And the other thing I just need, I know that you all know this, but what's making this particular crisis so challenging is our agencies are used to responding to crisis, but usually those crises are local or regional or in a particular state or province. They are not in every aspect of your life. So here, your employee may be dealing with difficult client situations or uncomfortable dynamics because of the change in flow with work or what have you, but they're also dealing with tremendous disruption at home and tremendous disruption in their personal life. They can't go to the gym necessarily. You know, there are certain things that they just can't do. And so all of that, there's really no escape. So we should just keep our focus on trying to have that balance.
Ruben, that's something that I'm going to be doing, is sending at least a twice a week email to staff just about things they can do for themselves. The website Good Therapy has some really good information about how to take care of yourself. Here we're also finding, for example, the yoga studio I go to here is starting to do classes remotely. So I'm sharing that with all of staff and encouraging them to do that. Keep a regular schedule, get your rest, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So I think really a part of our job is to support our staff as they go through this.
Yep.
And I don't know if other folks listened to the JCPA webinar yesterday with Rabbi Wolpe. But one thing I really have given a lot of thought to is we need to think about what we're going to look like when this is over. And something that's really stuck to me, he said, we need to think about, are we going to fall apart or are we going to pull together? And I think we just need to keep that for ourselves, our families, our communities, and our staff. Keep all of that in our heads right now.
Oh. Yeah. Thank you, Jerry. All right. Any final comments or questions? I just want to take this moment then to truly thank Anita. and Christina King from CNA Benefits, who on the drop of a dime were immediately responsive to us to pull this presentation together. HR is a very, very complicated aspect of this whole dynamic, and it's one that typically doesn't get a lot of attention in our network. And so increasingly, we want to create a forum to have this dialogue. We do have an HR affinity group, but we need to have more time to be able to talking about the staff needs, et cetera. So really, thank you. And just repeating, we are going to get the slide deck out to everybody, and we are going to have the recording on the website. We will have the documents that you all share, and I will circulate Anita's contact info.
Thank you. So
if anybody has a one-off question that they want to dial direct, Anita is a resource for us. So thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks, Ruben. Thank you, Anita.
Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Stay safe and healthy.
Thank you.
Be safe.
Bye-bye. Bye-bye.